Blog Talk Radio.
You just have to look at the sudden change of leadership in Egypt after their first democratically held election to understand why freedom matters throughout the world, or why countless people are dying in the streets of Syria and Afghanistan to comprehend the complexity of the struggle for freedom. As a seventh-generation American whose roots go back to slavery in the South, I don't take my freedom for granted and know the steep price paid to keep this freedom, this country, free. We are far from perfect and have so much to correct. We have complex diversity and multicultural dynamics to assess and implement throughout the 50 states and its territories, and issues of class and economic disparities and voting rights are center stage in our fight for equality and fairness. Despite the inequities, America is still a leading world power where liberty is valued and appreciated. We salute the men and women, past and present, who paved the way to build the American society, and look at ways where we can get better in this never-ending struggle to maintain freedom for all. It's the 4th of July, and I'm Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. This is Carol Copeland Thomas. Happy 4th of July. If you're listening live or if you're listening after the fact, I hope this is kicking off a great summer for those in the United States, or a great winter for those who are living in other parts of the world and it actually is wintertime. Today it's a very warm day. I don't rarely run air conditioning in my home office, but I'm running it today because the humidity is way up there, but it's a bright sunny day. It is not snowing or raining, so I definitely won't complain. I'm going to work a little bit. I'm going to kick back a bit. One of the rare times that I'm not going to barbecue, sort of upgrading the barbecue pit, so I'll do that later on this summer, but I am definitely going to enjoy this day and its symbolism. So this is going to be a little mix and match day. I'm going to throw in some trivia, give you a little bit of history, and again, because we can so quickly just forget about those who paid the price for us to enjoy the casual living that we have here in the United States, I just think it's really important to bring out some of the important facts about why the 4th of July matters, certainly here in the United States. You just have to look at what's taking place right now in Egypt, where literally within 48 hours, barely 48 hours, they have ousted Mohamed Morsi, who was the democratically elected president of that country. He is part of the Brotherhood, an 80-year-old organization in Egypt. They've been working very quietly behind the scenes for many years. He was fairly elected, but he didn't do the job. And the people spoke out, and they said, nope, we're not going to have our freedoms taken away so quickly by this person. They worked, and they have, again, the way their military operates in Egypt is very different than other countries where you look at the military from a very oppressive point of view. They put a lot of respect and confidence in the military. So the military, hearing the people out in the streets protesting, said, President Morsi, you have to leave office, even though he did not want to leave office. And he's now under house arrest. It remains to be seen what's going to take place in Egypt. They have called for elections in the next 6 to 9 months. Hopefully they'll get it right. But like our country years ago, democracies that are hard fought, typically the transitional period can be quite fragile and unfortunately quite bloody. We're hoping that the blood will not be spewing all over the streets of Cairo and Alexandria and other places, and that somehow they can get it right the second time. We are also sending our prayers and thoughts to the people in Syria. They still have a long way to go. and their leader is not leaving anytime soon. So that's going to be, unfortunately, a very tough struggle. I mention that because these are countries in the Middle East where they are still fighting for freedom. They want a form of democracy that resembles ours in the United States, even though we have certainly many things to correct on all fronts. But for 237-odd years or so, we've been trying to work at it and get it right. And other parts of the world are trying to take care of that as well. Just as a sidelight, I wanted to let you know that our webinar series is up and running, and our next webinar will take place on Wednesday, July 17th, 2013. The way we're running our webinars is that you have a chance to listen and participate free. And then if you want to listen to the archive, if you can't participate, you become a member of the Multicultural Symposium Series. You can do that easily at the website, mssconnect.com, mssconnect.com. Go to the website. You can sign up. The membership includes the archive, listenings of all of the websites, all the webinars that we've run, and our very exciting upcoming November 7th multicultural conference that will take place at the University of Massachusetts Boston campus. We've already confirmed our keynote speaker for the morning and our lunch. This is our 7th conference. I'm very excited about the lineup and the speakers, workshops that we're going to have. Our keynote speaker in the morning will be television anchor from NECN, LaToya Edwards. I've heard her moderate panels and speak. She's a fabulous speaker. And outside of Dr. Keith Motley, who will also be our kickoff welcome speaker, I think they're going to just do a great tag team. She will be our keynote speaker in the morning after having heard Dr. Keith Motley. You're just going to be fired up. So it's going to be a fabulous time, and we'll give you more information as time goes on. Our lunch speaker that's been confirmed is the Vice President of Global Inclusion, Paul Francisco. Fabulous, very committed professional, and also a great speaker, and he will just wow us at lunch. So we have great bookend speakers in the morning and the afternoon. You'll get more information. We'll begin to post things on the website. Everything will be at mssconnect.com. So the webinar, the conference series, and everything else in between, this counts to our Empowerment Breakfast, the Black History Empowerment Breakfast. That's all a part of being a member of the Multicultural Symposium Series. And throughout the summer, we're going to really fortify it and give you many, many reasons why it really is to your advantage to become a member. My book signings are going well. I'm going to be hitting the road later this month, going to Delaware and Philadelphia and other parts. I've been up in Manchester, New Hampshire, doing some work. So we'll give you more information about my books and other books that will be coming out as well. So it's I'm excited about what's taking place. Well, let's get back to the 4th of July. And for those of you who are listening live or certainly as an archive, just give you a little food for thought and why it's just so important to think about the significance of this holiday. It is the beginning. It's the birthplace of the United States. And I go to Wikipedia and other places to get background information. You can read it on your own, or you can go to my blog at tellcarol.com, and I have information posted there too. But to give you a little bit of information, during the American Revolution, the legal separation, let me back up and just tell you what is the 4th of July. Independence Day, or the 4th of July, it's a federal holiday in the United States, and it is really the commemoration of the adoption of the Declaration of Independence. That declaration was actually signed on July 2nd, 1776, but we actually celebrated on the 4th of July. That document declared that we were independent from Great Britain, and it is now associated with all the celebrations that we have, but it was certainly arduously put together. Warm, hot days, in fact, when they were hammering out the language for the independence, the Declaration of Independence, they had all the windows shut. They didn't want the loyalists to hear on the outside. So you can imagine, with no air conditioning, no electricity, and no fans, how hot it had to be. But commitment to freedom and independence was hard fought, and sacrifices were made certainly on very hot days. So during the American Revolution, the legal separation of the 13 colonies from Great Britain occurred on July 2nd, 1776, as I had mentioned earlier, when the Second Continental Congress voted to approve a resolution of independence that had been proposed in June by Richard Henry Lee of Virginia, declaring that the United States independent from Great Britain. After voting for independence, this is again on the 2nd, so that really is the official day, even though we celebrated on July 4th, Congress turned its attention to the Declaration of Independence, a statement explaining this decision, which had been prepared by a committee of five, with Thomas Jefferson, who ended up being our third president, as the principal author. Congress debated and revised the wording of the declaration, finally approving it on July 4th. So it was approved. It started off on the 2nd, and then finally the final approval was on the 4th. A day later, John Adams had written to his wife, Abigail. And I'll tell you why I'm just such an admirer of John and Adam and Abigail Adams in just a few minutes. But he said during this momentous time, the second day of July, 1776, will be the most memorable epoch in the history of America. I am apt to believe that it will be celebrated by succeeding generations as the great anniversary festival. It ought to be commemorated as the day of deliverance by solemn acts of devotion to God Almighty. It ought to be solemnized with pomp and parade and shows and games, sports, guns, bells, bonfires, and illuminations from one end of this continent to the other, from this time forever, forever, this time forward, forevermore. And interestingly, Adams' prediction was off by 2 days. From the onset, Americans celebrate independence on July 4th, the date shown on the much-publicized Declaration of Independence, rather than July 2nd, the day the resolution of independence was approved in a closed session of Congress. So that is the background. So all of this was the announced independence from the English monarchy. Now, the war happened the next year. So the next year, in terms of Concord and Lexington, and the Revolutionary War happened after the Declaration of Independence. So that is the importance and the order of it. And I would encourage you, as I've written in my books, to go to Philadelphia so that you can see the original copy of the Declaration of Independence, which is stored in Philadelphia, and then go to Washington, D.C., and you can certainly learn more of that historical information. You can certainly go online and do it, but I always encourage people to go and see things for yourself. You can see the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia. You can certainly see where things were hammered out, and it's just important just to know that this is a very key central point to why this country started. Now, interestingly, there was language originally put in the Declaration of Independence condemning slavery. You had 13 colonies, and that language was put in place by people like John Adams and others. But because it was going to be a controversial issue, because you had states, colonies at that time, like Georgia, South Carolina, et cetera, they left the language in place. They just didn't touch it there. It was certainly picked up with the Constitution once the Revolutionary War ended and the, I call them American bylaws, took place. Those are the articles and all the components of the U.S. Constitution. But it was originally discussed during the days of these very hot days, when they were hammering out the Declaration of Independence, but they did not put the language in place there. But it certainly was up for discussion and was then obviously dealt with later on, and then obviously a war was fought. I am respectful of the fact that Thomas Jefferson was the architect of the language for the Declaration of Independence. I'm also respectful of the fact that he went on to become our third president, and that he was a man of means and stature and very influential. I'm also very respectful of the fact that George Washington, who was the general during the Revolutionary War, a gentleman farmer from Virginia, married a well-to-do woman who had been married before. They were slave owners. The whole piece of slavery as an African-American, for me, is a bone of contention. And I study history quite closely. And for that reason, my total respect always goes to John Adams and Abigail Adams before it goes to George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, even though I know all of them and others had to work together, hammer out compromises when you're looking at this whole question of slavery. But during that time, my people were living as slaves, probably brought over maybe years before, a few years before, and they were living on plantations in Georgia and Virginia and probably South Carolina. My lineage goes back that far. Fortunately, with my mother's side of the family, the slaves were not split up. They were kept on one plantation, and then moved to another plantation, but they did not, this is my mother's father's people, they were able to stay intact and live together as husband and wife and with their children. So William and Louisa Gaines, who lived during this very time in the 1700s, had 14 children, and then one of their 14 children had 14 children, Gus Gaines, and that's my lineage. So this is very much my era because my people lived during this time, and decisions regarding slavery and others had everything to do with them. When I look at Abigail Adams and John Adams during that time, let me recommend two books to you that I think will be very beneficial. One book is by Lynn Whitehey, and that book is Dearest Friend, A Life of Abigail Adams. It's a bestseller. It was written a couple of years ago, but it'll give you a sense of who she was and the importance that she has in terms of women's rights. I give her an awful lot of credit because she lived in Braintree, Massachusetts, along with her husband. When he was there, he was busy trying to build the country, so he was gone a fair amount of time. They had a very long marriage. But during that time, she actually stood up and fought for a young black kid who lived in Braintree, Massachusetts. Ultimately, they carved out Braintree to become part of it was Quincy, Mass., and then part of it was Braintree, Mass. But this young kid was free, and he wanted to go to school, and they wouldn't let him in, and she fought for him to go to school in that community. So I give her a lot of credit. She also wrote very long letters to her husband. They wrote letters back and forth during his time in Europe when he was busy trying to raise money and the country was trying to form and he was one of the leaders living in that area. And so their long letters gave a real sense of their commitment, not only to each other, but the building of this country. Now, interestingly, when Abigail Adams went to live with her husband when they married, she had come from a slave-owning family. But when she married John Adams, he did not own slaves, and he did not believe in slavery. And so they never owned slaves together. So he went on to become the second president, George Washington, obviously the first president. He's the second president. And so his record was clear. He never owned slavery, never owned slaves. He was a gentleman farmer, had lots of property in Braintree, Massachusetts, which became Quincy, Mass., had several children. One of his children became the fifth president of the United States, John Quincy Adams. But my respect is multiple for this couple. They were a power couple. They believed in freedom and liberty in this country. They did not own slaves. They believed in educational equity for all people. They believed in a large degree in women's rights. And I just really look at that as an African American, and I put them in high esteem. So they're always a power couple for me. Now, what's interesting is with John Adams, there became a rivalry between him and Thomas Jefferson. Another book I'd like to recommend, highly recommend, is David McCullough's book, John Adams. He actually won a Pulitzer Prize. It's David McCullough is a best-selling author. He's written many historical novels. He writes a lot of his books with an old typewriter on Martha's Vineyard, believe it or not. But his work is absolutely compelling, and he has written, I think, one of the leading books on John Adams. So there was this rivalry throughout their lifetime between John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. One, Thomas Jefferson, the slave owner. We can go on and on about his relationship with Sally Hemings and the children that he fathered with her. She was a slave, and that's just another show altogether. But John Adams, who did not own slaves, they were equally in the struggle in terms of freedom, but their lifestyle was very, very different, and their rivalry took place throughout the years. Finally, at the end of their life, ironically, they both died on the same day, on the 4th of July, and that's something that you should know about. This is just a little piece from David McCullough's book where he talks about Thomas Jefferson and clearly John Adams dying on the same day. It says at Monticello, which is the home of Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson had been unconscious since the night of July 2nd. His daughter Martha, his physician Robley Dunson, and others keeping watch. At about 7 o'clock the evening of July 3rd, Jefferson awakened and uttered a declaration. This is the 4th. For this is the 4th of July. Told that it would be soon, he slept again. 2 hours later, at about 9, he was roused to be given a dose of laudanum, which is like morphine just to ease the pain or whatever, which he refused, saying, "No, doctor, nothing more." Something near 4 o'clock in the morning, Jefferson spoke his last words, calling in his servants, with a strong, clear voice, according to the account of his grandson, Thomas Jefferson Randolph, but which servants he called or what he said to them are unknown. Jefferson died at approximately 1 o'clock in the afternoon on July 4th, as bells in Charlottesville could be faintly heard ringing in the celebration in the valley below. Now, at Quincy, Massachusetts, we have Thomas Jefferson. And let me just skip down and say, somewhat later, struggling for breath, he whispered in his granddaughter Susanna's ear, "Help me, child, help me." Then lapsed into a final silence. At about 6:20, his heart stopped. This is again on July 4th. John Adams was dead. So they both died on July 4th, both these fathers of the United States, and there are just countless stories in this book on John Adams' life that will really give you a sense of this hard-fought history of how this country was formed. It was not easy. It was difficult. It was contentious. And it's something I think that we need to know more of and certainly study more of. Another little trivia point that I wanted to share with you was this whole meaning of e pluribus unum, what that means. So here we go. On July 4th, 1776, the same day the Declaration of Independence was signed, the Second Continental Congress passed another resolution that attracted little notice, that Dr. Franklin, Mr. J. Adams, that John Adams I just talked about, and Mr. Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson, in other words, be a committee to prepare a device for a seal of the United States of America. The three hired Pierre Eugène du Simpétier, a Swiss artist living in Philadelphia. Though his fancy design was rejected by Congress, They liked the slogan he chose, E Pluribus Unum, a Latin phrase meaning one out of many. And it is retained for the front of the final design adopted in June 20th, 1782. The slogan had been borrowed, presumably, by the artist from Gentleman's Magazine, a popular London periodical, though it originally derived from the Roman poet Virgil. The Department of State has official charge of the Great Seal of the United States, which appears front and back on the on every dollar bill that we have. We actually have that saying, that Latin saying there. The face of the Great Seal containing the slogan appears on presidential orders and treaties between the United States and the federal government. So again, just giving you some information, a little bit more that you may not know about in terms of the 4th of July and how things have originated. Lastly, when you look at the 4th of July, we are, let me give you the definition of a Republican democracy, because we are a democracy, but there's this republicanism that really constitutes our form of government. Republicanism as a form of government, as opposed to a specific political party or a set of guidelines, is the ideal upon which the American system of central rule was first modeled, again, back in 1776, July 4th. The polar opposite of egalitarianism, republican democracy is the rule of a central government by an inner circle of nonpartisan and impartial citizens, in short, an enlightened elite. After centuries of rule by monarchy and military might, republicanism was somewhat radical and fragile, given Oliver Cromwell's failed try in England in the 18th century, nonetheless. Nonetheless, this ideal was embraced by leaders of the American Revolution, most of whom were independent, virtuous, property-holding citizens. Republican democracy originated as an ideal in the writings of Cicero and others who used the Roman Republic as their model. It was updated during the Renaissance by Machiavelli. Egalitarianism, or pure democracy, on the other hand, goes back to ancient Greek civilization or philosophers, equally influenced on the thinking of the founding fathers. The tensions between the two ideals have helped to shape the American government. So we are a democracy, but this whole representation component deals specifically with our republican form of governance. So just a little information. And in closing, I want to read to you from my last chapter of my multicultural book, because I love this quote by Dr. King. And I hope that you'll pick out some quotes and some ways that you can share your thoughts and share the importance of democracy and freedom with those you love throughout this weekend of celebration. But Dr. King said, this is from the letter from his Birmingham jail that he wrote in 1963, Justice Socrates felt that it was necessary to create a tension in the minds so that individuals could rise from the bondage of myths and half-truths to the unfettered realm of creative analysis and objective appraisal, so must we see the need for nonviolent gadflies to create the kind of tension in society that will help men rise from the dark depths of prejudice and racism to the majestic heights of understanding and brotherhood. This country was fought over and sacrificed, the blood, sweat, and tears that made it and has made it a great nation. Voting is a critical right of every American citizen. Health care equity is a right of every American citizen. And in the next year, we will have health care reform in this country for the first time. There are many, many things that we have to do to move forward in this country. But today we celebrate July 2nd, July 4th, whatever day you want to just clarify. It's a great day when you look at the United States and how far we've come. We have a long way to go, but we certainly have come an awfully long way. Have a great 4th of July. Study up, read up, enjoy your holiday, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks. We'll be back in 2 weeks talking about another important topic. Thanks so much for listening. This is Carol Copeland Thomas. Happy July 4th.